This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
More impeachment talk. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, January 11. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she'll make an effort to impeach President Trump this week if she doesn't get cooperation from Vice President Mike Pence.
Charges are beginning to pile up for many of the people appearing in photos and videos during last Wednesday's riot at the U.S. Capitol building.
Apple and Amazon have joined Google in silencing the social media app Parler. Hear reaction from the CEO.
And the healthcare workers struggling to get the COVID vaccine for themselves.
We're obviously reporting on all these frontline workers now getting the vaccine. It's sort of a happy moment. And then we started hearing from a lot of healthcare workers who don't work inside hospital systems who were saying, we don't even know where to get the vaccine or when it's going to arrive or who to even contact about it.
Julie Wernow at the Wall Street Journal on how the vaccine remains elusive for many doctors and nurses. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the House will move to impeach President Trump this week if Vice President Mike Pence doesn't take action to remove him from office following the breach at the U.S. Capitol by protesters.
Only a number of days until we can be protected from him. But he has done something so serious that there should be prosecution against him.
She was on CBS. In a letter to colleagues, Mrs. Pelosi said Democrats today will first introduce a resolution calling for the vice president to use the 25th Amendment to remove Mr. Trump. Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, a staunch defender of the president, was on Fox.
This impeachment would be unnecessary. It would be divisive. And it's only being done because Democrats want to keep the focus on President Trump. You would think that with just 9-10 days left in the Trump presidency for this term, you would have Democrats eager to focus on what Joe Biden would be bringing to the country.
The White House has dismissed the impeachment effort as politically motivated. The president did not appear in public or make remarks over the weekend after Twitter shut off his personal account. Several men seen in photos and videos from last Wednesday's riot in Washington have been charged in federal court over the weekend with things like violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. A newly elected West Virginia lawmaker was among them. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
A 36-year-old Florida man is accused of removing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's lectern. Also accused is a man named Jacob Chansley, photographed entering the Capitol shirtless, wearing face paint, and a bearskin headdress. Yesterday, prosecutors charged two men who allegedly brought restraints. A Tennessee man appeared to be seen carrying plastic zip ties, while a man from Texas was wearing a green helmet, tactical vest, and camo jacket. Among those who identified the Texas man to the FBI was his ex-wife. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. By Friday, by the way, authorities say more than 40 people had been charged in D.C.'s Superior Court, and at least 13 had been charged in federal court with gun crimes, violent entry, assaulting an officer, and other charges. It's been a busy couple of days for social media. Apple and Amazon have both stopped supporting Parler, a service that's skyrocketed in popularity among conservatives the past couple of months. Amazon said Saturday it would no longer provide cloud computing services to Parler, and Apple suspended the company's app from the App Store. Both companies said Parler has not demonstrated in recent conversations that it can adequately address threats of violence on the platform. Parler CEO John Matz was on Fox News.
They all worked together to make sure at the same time we would lose access to not only our apps, but they're actually shutting all of our servers off tonight, off the internet. So they made an attempt to not only kill the apps, but to actually destroy the entire company.
The announcements come a day after Google suspended Parler from its app marketplace, citing violations of requirements for sufficient moderation of content. Interest in Parler has risen since November, as Facebook and Twitter have become more aggressive in policing content. On Friday, Twitter banned President Trump's personal account. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. And when you partner with a Dell Technologies advisor, you get real-time tailored advice. They'll even give you a free consultation on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, get special financing with Dell Business Credit and big savings on business computers with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and proven adaptability are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Welcome into Monday. President Trump is leaving office rejected by key Republicans in Washington and elsewhere, but with loyal grassroots conservatives poised to back him for the White House again in 2024, despite his incitement of the violent siege of the U.S. Capitol. So says David Drucker, senior correspondent at the Washington Examiner. David, what are you hearing?
Well, look, you know, in the aftermath of the siege of the United States Capitol, by grassroots Trump supporters, and after watching Trump encourage them to march on Capitol Hill, and after he looked the other way as the violence was unfolding and only begrudgingly encouraged them finally to go home while still insisting the election was stolen, a lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill that have been aligned with him and that have supported him have reached a breaking point. At the same time, we don't have an indication yet that among so many of the Republican voters that have believed in him, supported him, been happy with his shake things up style of leadership, that they're any less supportive than they were before Wednesday. And look, when you've looked at polling over the past couple of months, as the president insisted the election was stolen, and, you know, as the president talked about broad conspiracies that took the election away from him and his supporters, they believed him. And just because of what happened Wednesday, there's no indication that they don't still believe him. And in fact, even though the president has finally acknowledged that he won't be president anymore after January 20th, or as of January 20th, he has not actually conceded the election or said that, you know, now that I've exhausted all legal remedies, which he did say, but now that I've done that, I now accept the results as being valid. And so I think, you know, we're still in a position where the Republican Party is going to have a significant contingent of voters who are supportive of Trump and his style of politics. And even though a fever might have broken among Republicans in the House and Senate, and the Senate mostly, not really the House, voters out there in the country that have liked Trump and appreciated his style, I think, are still going to exist and still going to be there for the president as an ex-president to call on.
Yeah. We're speaking with David Drucker, senior correspondent at the Washington Examiner. He's written a piece entitled "Republican Base Sticking with Trump After Inciting Capitol Siege." To that point, you said in your story, quoting one guy who's a Republican operative in the Midwest, he said, Trump will continue to be a player and have a significant following. I guess the question is, does that translate necessarily to an election win or election wins for others he might support?
I think that is what is unclear right now. It'll be interesting to see as time goes on which Republicans and how many Republicans request his endorsement, ask him to hold rallies for him. I think one thing that happened, and we don't actually know, but I think one thing in talking to Republicans and analyzing some shifting attitudes, one thing that happened because of the president's conduct on Wednesday and how Republicans feel about it, I now think that even if the president were to run for the White House again in 2024, whereas before there was a possibility that he might clear the field or really leave everybody waiting to see what he was going to do before doing it themselves. I don't think now you're going to see Republicans who are eyeing a White House run in 2024 wait for him to make a decision or stay out just because he runs.
If not for the post-election comments he made about the election being stolen or the events, say, during the attack on the Capitol building, would he be in the driver's seat in the Republican Party?
I think he could have been, for sure. I mean, imagine a scenario in which he concedes the election for, American traditions and says it's too bad that we came up short, but look at all that we accomplished. And I think Republicans were looking at Trump, Republicans understanding that he lost, but still saying, look at the increased support Republicans received from non-white voters. Look at the elevated turnout, even though it was less than Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And they saw a very significant political figure who they might have thought would be worth getting behind again in 2024. So I think it could have been a totally different story with a whole bunch of different kinds of voters and Republicans.
Thanks, David. David Drucker, senior correspondent at The Washington Examiner. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the House will proceed with legislation to impeach President Trump as she pushes the vice president and the cabinet to invoke constitutional authority to force him out. Pelosi spoke with CBS.
There is strong support in the Congress for impeaching the president a second time. This president is guilty of inciting insurrection. He has to pay a price for that.
The House action could start as soon as today as pressure increases on Trump to step aside. Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania has joined Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska in calling for Trump to resign and go away as soon as possible.
Number two.
Federal authorities continue to round up people following last week's deadly insurrection at the Capitol, including two men accused of carrying plastic restraints and others who allegedly carried weapons or stole from the building. At least 58 people have been arrested and charged for incidents in or near the Capitol.
Number three.
President Trump has been kicked off most mainstream social media platforms following his supporters' siege of the Capitol, but it remains to be seen how fast or where, if anywhere, on the internet he will be able to reach his followers. The far-right Parler had been the leading candidate until Google and Apple removed it from their app stores and Amazon booted it off its web hosting service early today. The search for the black boxes of a crashed jet are intensifying as authorities try to determine what caused the plane carrying 62 people to nosedive at high velocity into the Java Sea. The Boeing 737-500 jet disappeared minutes after taking off from Jakarta during heavy rain on Saturday, and the search so far has yielded plane parts and human remains, but no signs of survivors. So much for the weight of history, or practicing, or having your head coach on the sideline. The Cleveland Browns overcame all of it by dismantling the Pittsburgh Steelers 48-37 last night, picking up the franchise's first postseason victory in more than a quarter century. Al Michaels on NBC.
And they start with a horrible snap all the way back to the 2-yard line, and the Browns bounce it into the end zone where they wind up with a touchdown.
The Browns earn a trip to Kansas City Sunday to face the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs.
I kept having to look at the score because I watched the opening quarter of the game. It was 28-0, still with 2 minutes to go in the first quarter.
What a turnaround.
Holy cow. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. The COVID-19 pandemic has pushed some Americans to flee major cities like New York and San Francisco for less expensive towns. But a new study shows droves of people may not be leaving cities in other parts of the country. Jessica Menton at USA Today has been looking at the data. Jess, what's up here?
We've talked a lot about this, how the pandemic has pushed some Americans to flee major cities when we're talking about New York, San Francisco, for obviously less expensive towns in 2020. But it was interesting. LendingTree pulled some data, and they discovered that sort of when we were thinking about droves of people might not actually be living cities, leaving cities in other parts of the country. And so while there's a slightly larger percentage of homeowners from big cities that have moved to towns last year compared to with we were looking at 2019, the share of movers has remained largely the same over that two-year period, which is interesting. And so it looks like few homeowners were actually relocated out of the city that they had previously lived in. And so when Lending Tree was doing this data, it looked like an average of 84% had stayed in the same city, while close to 16% left for another city. So it looks like people were kind of taking advantage of what was happening with lower rates, but also looking to maybe not leave too far away from home, and also people taking advantage of sort of working more remote. So they may have moved either to a different part of town or maybe outside of that town, but not too far away. So in case, like, once the economy reopens more, if they need to come back into the city for work, they're not too far away. So that was something that was an interesting trend, where there may have been some people in the beginning of the pandemic that were moving across the country, but there were a large group of people that were looking for other options just to stay maybe close to home, but not too far away.
Interesting. When we talk about people leaving cities, okay, maybe there wasn't an overwhelming amount, I guess, but my question is, and it may not be in this data, are other people actually moving in? And I guess that might only apply to renters, because if obviously you own a home and you sell it, somebody has taken your home.
Well, that is actually something that I've reported for when it comes to other stories. When you look at big cities like, say, New York, for instance, they're starting to see not an overwhelming amount, but as more on the renting side, not on the home-owning side, but more as apartments have begun getting cheaper and cheaper, it's sort of opening the door for people who might not have thought that they could previously live in an expensive city like New York or San Francisco to where now they might be able to afford that. Obviously, with the pandemic still going on, it kind of limits a lot of people's abilities. But I've talked to realtors who and apartment brokers who have said basically what they're kind of advertising on listings now, what typically would have been, say, a two-bedroom, they're using it as more like, hey, this is a one-bedroom, but then you also have an office.
Thanks, Jess. Jessica Minton, personal finance reporter at USA Today. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Fellas, it's 2021, the year of the rally, the one where we kick 2020 into the rearview mirror and start changing things for the better. So why not dress the part? Be the man that's always on this year with Cuts Clothing. They redesigned the simplest classics like the plain tee from the ground up, combining cutting-edge fabric technology with intelligent, minimalist design to get the next-level comfort you have to wear to believe. The one that I love for winter is their new hoodie. The Hyperloop French Terry fabric they developed not only feels buttery soft like the signature Pika fabric on their shirts, but it's temperature controlled. You never have to take it off. And just like me, you won't want to. Entrepreneurs, mavericks, athletes, podcast hosts, everyone loves Cuts. They're echoing GQ. It's the only shirt worth wearing. Let's kick off 2021 the right way, starting with your wardrobe. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing.
Expert insight, world-class reporting. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, January 11. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The House is expected to move to impeach President Trump this week. Dozens charged in connection with last week's rioting at the Capitol, including many identified in photos and videos. Amazon and Apple, the latest to silence Parler. Wall Street Journal says JPMorgan Chase and Citigroup will stop all political PAC donations. Some Chicago students return to schools today. Alabama versus Ohio State in the college football championship tonight, and a follow-up to a fundraising story for a homeless man. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Eligible healthcare workers are getting COVID-19 vaccinations across the country, with many now receiving their second doses. But Julie Wernow, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says a large chunk of private doctors and healthcare workers who are not associated with a hospital system say they are struggling to locate the shots. Julie, explain.
we're obviously reporting on all these frontline workers now getting the vaccine. It's sort of a happy moment. And then we started hearing from a lot of healthcare workers who don't work inside hospital systems who were saying, we don't even know where to get the vaccine or when it's going to arrive or who to even contact about it. So it turns out that it's not so simple for a lot of healthcare workers who don't happen to be inside these big hospital systems.
Wow. All right. So for the ones that are outside these big hospital systems, is this a communication breakdown?
It seems that the way that things, you know, were the way that the government decided to do things, we started out with the hospital workers. I mean, I think to anybody who's been watching this pandemic, there seems to be a sort of logic to that initially, right? That this is where, you know, the COVID wards are. These are the hardest hit areas. This is where a lot of folks are facing COVID. But as it turns out, there's any number of doctors out there who are not inside these hospitals that are facing the same thing. I spoke to a general practitioner, for instance, who was telling me that, you know, she often is the front line. People come to her for COVID tests or, you know, with COVID symptoms, and then ultimately she sends them on to the hospital, and she feels like, you know, when her government says to her that we are dealing with the most hardest hit folks first and we'll get to you later, that, you know, it's kind of a hard pill to swallow, so to speak.
Yeah. Boy, I don't ask this to be a smart aleck, but hospitals wouldn't deliberately be keeping out the private doctors, would they?
One of the things that's been interesting about the way that the vaccine is being rolled out is that it's going to be different in literally every county in America. You know, the federal government decided to really make this sort of a local project. And so I talked to one doctor in California who isn't inside a healthcare system, who called every single hospital in the region, basically asking if she could come and get a shot. And they said that they're dealing with their own employees first. Meanwhile, her sister-in-law, who is in another county in the same state, called her local hospital, also isn't affiliated with a hospital, and they told her to come down and get a shot. And so the difficulty here is that there isn't really any advice to give that you can use across the board, across the country.
Boy, we're speaking with Julie Wernow, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called COVID-19 Vaccines Remain Elusive for Many Doctors and Healthcare Workers. So as you said, it's kind of county to county, it seems. The states are not taking charge here, or they're incapable of it. Do we know?
Well, there's a few different issues happening. In some states, you know, they're just saying, we don't even have enough vaccines yet that we are able to get through the hospital workers. They're saying, please hold on. This is new. This is early. It's only going to be a matter of days. And in fact, even some of the doctors that I spoke to on Monday who were very concerned, by Tuesday, a few of them had figured out how to get vaccinated. And so it's a really rapidly changing landscape. In other cases, you know, they're saying that they actually haven't prioritized doctors that work outside of hospitals. So in some states, they're putting firefighters and police officers and EMTs in front of the line, right behind hospital workers. And so those folks are being lined up, for instance, with folks in the general population who are 75 years and up. Whereas in other states, everybody is in the same category and is entitled to the vaccine at the same time, but they really don't have enough vaccines to go around.
Boy, didn't you say in one case there was it was like 2,000 non-healthcare workers who somehow got ahead of the frontline workers?
That's right. In one county, the hospital, you know, received their vaccines, and they sent out essentially an email to everyone on staff because hospitals are across the board pretty much letting anyone who works or is associated with a hospital get a vaccine, and that might include, for instance, IT staff or folks who are janitorial staff. So they sent out this link, and what people did is they shared it with people outside of the hospital. You know, it only takes, you know, you share it with your mother, another one shares it with their friend, and
Wow. Soon
they had 2,000 people who did not work at the hospital signed up to get COVID shots for the vaccine.
There's Julie. Julie Wernow, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning America's First News. Hey, thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it's fair to say that Tom Brady and George Blanda, two of the oldest quarterbacks to play in the NFL, had different approaches to being professional football players. Brady's famous for his regimented diet and training regimen, which involves hours of physical, careful work, careful meal planning, and endless water chugging. Blanda, meanwhile, was famous for smoking cigarettes on the way to the locker room, in the locker room, and even on the field. On Saturday night, Brady eclipsed Blanda's record as the oldest person to throw a touchdown pass in the playoffs, which led the TV broadcast to put the two NFL greats' pictures side by side. And there were a lot of jokes on social media due to how young Brady looks at 43 compared to Blanda, who looked like he could have been Brady's dad. One Twitter user joked that maybe it was time for all of us to try that avocado ice cream that Brady likes, and others thought it was a perfect advertisement for Brady's TB12 diet. Others thought it was the perfect how it started versus how it's going meme. Writing that, Brady's pick was like them in February of 2020, and Blanda's pick was what they look like now.
Blanda's picture is funny because too he's got the pork chop sideburns.
Yes,
right, really looks the part of
it. I looked it up. So he was 43 in 1970.
Yeah,
yeah. So that was just kind of the hairstyle at the time, sort of the long shaggy hair. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of gray hair. Obviously, Tom's a at least as far as we can tell, not a lot of gray hair, at least not showing.
And
to the rest of us,
as somebody pointed out, you could age quickly in the NFL back then too, because quarterbacks were not afforded as many protections as are today.
Yeah, so. It was a different game back then, for sure.
And a couple of the comments: why does Blanda look 73, not 43?
No, he literally looks like he could be Tom's dad.
I agree.
And here's an athletic feat even Tom Brady likely can't pull off: an Indian man has set the Guinness World Record, completing 85 four-finger push-ups in 1 minute. The man, who's a former weightlifter, broke the previous record of 70, set just 3 years ago. Now, lest you think that four-finger push-ups means that you can take it easy and use four fingers on each hand, rather, you use four total fingers, only two on each hand. In a video posted to YouTube, the record holder is seen in his record-breaking attempt, banging out the 85 push-ups using just his index finger and thumb on each hand.
Yeah. Like they're nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's, doing one more than one per second here, right?
Yeah.
So just,
it's incredible.
Just flying through it.
And I guess to describe the formation, right, he's in standard push-up position, but his index fingers are facing forward, mm-hmm. and his thumbs are kind of like the back support.
Yeah,
right?
Basically. Yeah.
So it is something.
Just
to watch.
Doing one like that, I'm pretty sure I would, I would tear something in my thumb just doing one of those.
Oh, things would crack and it would not be pretty.
No, you don't want that on YouTube, I can tell you right now.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt. And the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. And when you partner with a Dell Technologies advisor, you get real-time tailored advice. They'll even give you a free consultation on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, get special financing with Dell Business Credit and big savings on business computers with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. There are more ways than ever to connect to America's First News. You can download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app from the Apple or Google app stores. You can also tell Alexa, Google, or Siri to play This Morning with Gordon Deal. Millions of TurboTax and H&R Block customers say their stimulus checks were deposited in the wrong bank accounts this past week, forcing many of them to wait longer for the badly needed aid. But MarketWatch says some have reported that the money has started to hit their bank accounts after the snafu. Christopher Trent of Roanoke, Virginia is one of those Americans. Mr. Trent, who used TurboTax to prepare his 2019 returns, was confused when he saw a not available status message when he checked his account on the IRS Get My Payment tool, which was created to help Americans track the status of their stimulus money. When Mr. Trent contacted TurboTax later last week, he was told that if he paid his tax preparation fees with his refund, then his second stimulus payment may have been sent to a temporary bank account established by TurboTax, and that account is no longer active. Millions of payments were set to be directly deposited in accounts the IRS had on file by last Monday. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
House Democrats will move forward with plans to remove President Trump from office this week, starting with a resolution that calls on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on CBS.
These people are enablers of the president's behavior. I remember when Republicans in the Senate went to see Richard Nixon and said, it's over. That's what has to happen now.
Majority Leader Steny Hoyer today will request unanimous consent for the Raskin resolution, which calls on Pence to convene the cabinet and activate the 25th Amendment. If they don't receive consent, which is almost guaranteed since only a single Republican would have to object, Democrats will vote on the measure tomorrow.
Number two.
At least 25 people are under investigation for terrorism related to Wednesday's siege on the Capitol. Five people died, including a Capitol Hill police officer, after the pro-Trump mob overwhelmed security lines.
Number three.
The PGA of America is cutting ties to President Trump, voting to take the PGA Championship event away from his New Jersey golf course next year. PGA of America President Jim Richardson.
It was a decision made to ensure that PGA of America and the PGA professionals can continue to lead and grow our great game for decades to come.
This is the second time in just over 5 years the PGA of America removed one of its events from a Trump course. Public health officials have complained for months that they do not have enough support or money to get COVID-19 vaccines quickly into arms. Now that slower than expected start is proving them right. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
We need the federal government, the state government, the manufacturers to get us a constant supply so we can hit that 1 million doses for the month of January.
Many officials worry that they're losing precious time at the height of the pandemic and the delays could cost lives. A new chapter of Sex and the City is coming to HBO Max. The show, called And Just Like That, will feature Sarah Jessica Parker, Cynthia Nixon, and Kristen Davis as their characters, Carrie, Miranda, and Charlotte, move into their 50s. Noticeably absent from the production, Kim Cattrall, who played Samantha in the series that ran on HBO from 1998 to 2004 and two Sex and the City movies.
Did you say Kristen Davis? That got my attention. I got you.
All right.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Follow up to a story we told you about last week when Evelyn Topper realized she had lost her wallet. She was distraught. The 80-year-old Ms. Topper had bought two drinks from a coffee shop in San Rafael, California. But when she got home that day, her wallet was nowhere to be found. What she didn't know was that it had made its way to a nearby dumpster where a 57-year-old homeless man named Sean Curry had found it. Mr. Curry was looking through the dumpster behind the coffee shop when he saw the wallet. He found Ms. Topper's contact info inside and gave her a call. They eventually met and he gave her the wallet. Remember that part. Ms. Topper's granddaughter decided to do a fundraiser for Mr. Curry, asking her friends to donate to a charity for her 12th birthday instead of giving her presents. Well, last week we told you that she raised $475 for the man and gave it to him. But a GoFundMe set up for him has now raised more than $44,000 for Mr. Curry. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.